Is your team not performing well? Is morale low and turnover high? Are you falling further behind the competition? I'm here to help. I'm your host, Shaney, and this is the Leadership Show, where business strategy and culture finally meet, and we make the long-awaited shift from rhetoric to results. I promise I'm not your typical boring leadership consultant, and I will help you get your shift together. Let's do this.
Hello, Leadershifters, and welcome to another episode of The Leadership Show with yours truly, Shaney. Today, I am joined by David Taylor Klaus. He's dialing in from Atlanta, Georgia today. And David is a fellow coach and leadership guru. And as I was getting to know him in advance of having him on the podcast today, I mean, we're not quite identical twins, but we have a lot of the same training and theories. And you might think to yourself, well, why would you have him on your podcast then? Well, because I'm so interested in his take on the world, and I'm so interested in learning how other people apply some of the same teaching that we were part of through Coactive Training Institute and Coactive Leadership and some of the programs that we have in common. And that's what makes the world go round, right? Is that everybody has their own ideas and their own applications. And that is kind of a nice segue to the one of the real reasons, and yet another real reason that I wanted to have David on the show, which was to educate all of you about his exciting new book, which is called Mindset Mondays. And what I just did was demonstrate a mindset shift that maybe you didn't think about, which is, well, why would you have someone so similar to you on the show? Well, you could see my mindset is we might be similar enough, but we're still two different people and lots to learn from each other and for you, the Leadership listener. So David, welcome to the show.
Thank you, Shaney. I'm excited for this one. I can't wait to see where we go.
I know. Round and round and round we go. Where we stop, nobody knows. Okay, so first of all, tell us about Mindset Monday, starting with what gave you the idea for the book and kind of like the path to publishing, since it maybe wasn't exact. I mean, nothing in life is a straight line, is it?
Ever. And see, well, here's the secret. I didn't start off to write a book, right? So when I started this whole Mindset Mondays with DTK project, it was, I wanted to get more facile speaking about any topic through the lens of my point of view and doing it off the cuff. And I hated the idea of doing video. I had all kinds of made up crap in my head about didn't want to do video, it was going to be terrible. I saw so much other video out there that was terrible. And so I've been working with this same marketing person for over 20 years. And so Jody knows me really well. And one of the things that I do on the back of all my business cards, there are like 50 different backs to my cards, and they all, each one has a different quote on it.
Ah.
So Jody said, you know, at this point, Facebook was really promoting their Facebook Live and over prioritizing it. So she said, look, pick up one of your cards with a quote on the back, flip on the camera and riff on what comes up for 10, 15 minutes. And we said, yeah, on a Monday morning, it's a great thing to play with mindset. So that's how that started. Now, Jody had this whole plan that she was talking about, and it could turn into a book and talks and events. And I just heard blah, blah, blah. Right? Because I didn't want to do the videos.
Because you were stuck on, oh shit, I don't know how
exactly
to do these video things. If I don't do it perfect, what does that say about me?
Exactly. All the saboteurs were screaming in my head. So she kept talking and I'm like, yeah, whatever. So I flip on the camera and I go, you know, I put it out to the world that I'm going to do this. I flip it on the first day. All the software crashes. It doesn't work. And I'm like, now this is a terrible idea. So the next week is the week of it's Groundhog Day. So I'm like, okay, fine. It's got to go better than the last one. So anyway, I finally get it working. And then over the first several weeks, people start showing up.
Ooh.
And then people start interacting, and they start interacting and chatting back and forth and commenting in between. And it starts a small Facebook group, which has been growing. And I'm now this coming Monday will be episode 141 of this weekly series.
Nice.
So I've enjoyed the hell out of it. And I started learning a ton about mindset and a lot about taking learning and making it real in the world and how we shift our lens and how that shifts our experience. Mm-hmm. And I started learning a lot from the community as they were going through this. And so I'm in part of a mastermind and everybody's talking about the book they're writing. And I was like, damn it. Now I have to pay attention. So it really surfaced the book. I was in the middle of reading a colleague's book and the chapters were like 50, 60 pages. And it felt like I was slogging through it. And it had nothing to do with the content. It's just, I felt like I wasn't making progress. It was one mm-hmm. of these. And then I heard Sam Horn, who's an author, and she does a lot of work with folks about getting their book out. And she said, you want to make the chapters short so that people can get a sense of accomplishment as they roll through the book. I'm like, mm-hmm. I get that. I was feeling it. So I another CTI coach, Laurie Shires, helped me get this book out of my bloody head and onto paper. But what we did was, these chapters are all short, easily digestible, and immediately mm-hmm. actionable learning. They're based on the first 52 episodes in the broadcast series.
Okay.
And it got really exciting as it started to come together. But as we were talking about in the pre-show, I read something that got my stomach to turn over. It's like the Pew Trust in 2015 did some research and said that 41% of people who buy a book read past chapter one.
That is so demoralizing for a fellow author. Yes.
I was like, it was kind of crushing. Now, I get it, because two of the books that are right here, not to mention how many are over there, I've not read yet. So I do have some shelfware, mm-hmm. and I know lots of other people do, but I wasn't going to pour life and heart and energy and money and time into this project for it to be shelfware. So I was like, okay, mm-hmm. just because there's cool stuff in there doesn't mean people are going to do anything with it. So Laurie and I created the Rewire Framework, which is a mechanism. It's a six-step process to take the learning from each chapter and actually take it out into their world and use it. So then I started to get really excited about this. And talk about it not being a straight line. Shani, this book was supposed to come out in February, right before, we're going to launch it on Groundhog Day. So it would have been a month before lockdown started in mm-hmm. the US. And nobody.
And what's ironic about that, it's every day has felt like Groundhog's Day since
yes,
COVID.
Yes.
Because that's what we say it's Blur's Day.
Right. It's at Blur's Day, the 32nd of awful. Yeah. Yes. I have no idea what day it is anymore.
Yeah.
Well, other than I do a broadcast on Monday morning, so I always know when it's Monday.
That's right.
Right. The publisher was not making the process easier. So I separated from the publisher, retooled, and did this thing self-published. So it's come out in September, right when people are at that, oh, we're seeing daylight. No, we're not, second wave, right? Mm-hmm. So it's been a really wild time. People are really using this book to shift the experience they're having in the world right now.
Mm-hmm. Well, let's talk about that.
Yeah.
So, you know, in fact, I was going to do it the opposite way. I was going to say, like, let's use a business example, maybe even something from the book, and then let's go real world COVID. But since we're on real world COVID now, let's do right. that first, and then we can move on to some, you know, common business examples. So how would you recommend to clients or readers to apply the concepts in Mindset Mondays to, oh, I don't know, let's just say the biggest election in the history of any of our generations, if we're living and breathing in yeah. the United States today?
Yeah, yeah. This is a really good time to be reminded that we have control over the experience we have in the world. Nothing's going to change what's going to happen over the next week, right? There will be an election and there will be some sort of political upheaval over the several days it's going to take to know who actually won.
That's right.
Or how it's going to play out.
Right.
And there's nothing that we can do to change that. However, what I love about this book, there's a quote that Carl Jung gets credit for, but it's really from the Talmud. It's, we do not see the world as it is. We see the world as we are.
Mm-hmm.
And the power in that is that when we change our lens through which we see the world, we change the way we experience it.
Yep.
And we are completely at choice and in control of how we experience these next several days or weeks, regardless of who wins between election night and inauguration day. There's going to be some crazy shit going on.
Absolutely.
So how do you want to be in relation to that? Where are you being choiceful
mm-hmm.
about how you frame it? Where so much of the conversation up until now has been, I hate the other guy. And it doesn't matter which guy you like. It's, I hate the other guy.
That's
even
right.
When there were 300 Democrats running for the nomination, it was, I hate the other ones. I hate all but this one. But it wasn't, you know, what you put your attention on expands.
Mm-hmm.
So how do you want to frame the conversation? I don't hear a lot of folk talking about what it is they want to see created, how they want things to be. They talk about how they don't want it and what they don't like. And that energy is pervasive.
And what country they're going to run off to if the wrong person gets elected. Wrong person.
As if any country were taking our passports right now.
Exactly.
Right? So this is about what is it you want to see created. I started my practice in 08 and 09, right in the middle of the fiscal readjustment we had.
Yes.
And the companies, the leaders that freaked out and went into trench mode, very few of those companies made it.
Mm-hmm.
The ones who looked at, I'm not saying they didn't go into trench mode, but the ones who from that position looked at, how do we reinvent, re-engineer, reimagine ourselves out of this?
Mm-hmm.
They're the ones whose mindset allowed them to see things differently, experience it differently, and create more shift.
Mm-hmm.
Those are the leaders who understood the shift comes from within. We don't have to go back to 1918 to figure out how to deal with this craziness.
Yep.
I mean, that's helpful. We can go back 12 years and look at who were the companies that created shift instead
that's
of
right.
waiting for the economy to shift.
Yep. Yes.
That's our job right now.
Absolutely. I mean, and that's when people ask me how, you know, why I named my business the Leader Shift Project. It's pretty much for exactly that reason, because we live in a world that is anything but static, and a leader who isn't constantly shifting, whether it's a strategy or a mindset, mm-hmm. then you know they're going to get lost, and so there's like shift feels a lot more intentional than change, which feels chaotic and like out of your control. So like we can be choiceful about how we shift in response to change.
Well, we have a choice. We can react to the changing world around us, or we can mm-hmm. respond.
That's right.
Right. And reacting is not conscious. It's not rational. It's not intentional or choiceful.
Mm-hmm.
It's effectively animalistic response.
Sure. Yeah.
It's an animalistic action.
Well, right, because it's coming from our amygdala, which is the reptile brain.
And the reptile brain doesn't have a lot of nuance.
That's right.
So I had a friend who from the 12-step program learned that we're not responsible for our first thought, but we are responsible for our second. So even when we react initially, we are at choice on how we respond after that.
Yep.
That's where mindset comes in. It's being intentional and choiceful about how we choose to respond.
Mm-hmm.
And boy, are we going to need that in the coming weeks.
Absolutely. And, you know, let's take it even further. So, okay, on a personal level, leader shifters, you may or may not be disappointed if not on November 2nd, on the 3rd, 4th, 5th, whatever day, all the mail-in ballots finally get counted in the various states that are... You know, whose deadlines have been
figuring
extended,
it out.
And
right,
it's all noise, because eventually we will have an answer as to who's going to be in the White House come inauguration for another 4 years. And so, you know, your first thought that you're not responsible for necessarily is the oh shit moment, and you know, all of the reactive things that we think and feel when we're disappointed or we feel threatened or pissed off or whatever. But what is the second thought you want to have about that on a personal level, and kind of get your shit together on that? Because if you don't, what's the impact you're going to have on your teams when you show up on the next Zoom call? Because, you know, most of us aren't going into any physical office right now. Because undoubtedly, and I've actually been having this conversation, and David, maybe you have been too, with leaders and organizations who are anticipating kind of chaos this week with people, you know, their employees being like apoplectic potentially, and how they're going to deal with that. And so leaders, we absolutely need to get more mindful and intentional about our own reaction, as well as how we want to show up and influence our, you know, the folks in our sphere of everyday work, to make sure that, you know, we're not getting stuck, right? It's like, okay, let's process what happened, and now let's choose how we're going to respond to what happened.
Well, yeah? and also making space for it. I mean, in the last, yeah, you know, the last election was the last campaign season and election season was toxic.
Yeah.
Not saying that this one isn't. During the last one, many leaders said, we don't talk about politics here. Right. And we don't have that luxury, that privilege anymore. Mm-hmm. That you can't, the energy from the campaign and the election results and whatever happens in between is already leaking into the workspace, particularly mm-hmm. now that we're working from home, and it's staining conversations. And if we pretend it's not there, and we pretend over the next several days that people aren't distracted, upset, celebrating, wherever they are, if we don't attend to that and create space for that, then we're treating our people as less than the human beings they are.
For
people
sure.
People need room to be with what happens. Celebration or mourning, irritation or excitement.
Yes.
If we don't give space for it, it will fester until it reaches the surface.
Yes, yes. And like giving space to individuals to process depending on, you know, which camp they're in, and also setting a tone of inclusion in that, like, just because you don't agree with the other camp, like, doesn't mean we can't still work together effectively. And let's, you know, let's look at it as we would any other difference where, I mean, the energy in the collective has been for more diversity, more inclusion, more equity, not making people wrong, leaving, you know, room for diverse opinions, even on politics, folks.
We used to be able to disagree without being disagreeable.
That's right.
And now's the time to bring that mindset back. How do we be civil with each other, especially when we don't agree?
Yes.
And in order to have the conversations that we need to be having around diversity, around equity, around inclusion, around belongingness, we can't do that from a mindset of, I'm right, you're wrong. That's only when you agree with me will you be okay. Until then, you're just an idiot. That kind of approach doesn't work.
Yes.
You know, the cool things is, one of the things we got to learn through the leadership program was that idea of alignment versus agreement.
Mm-hmm.
And that is a mindset shift that's core. When yes. we start with agreement, have you shared this with the leader shifters yet?
I teach this concept, but I'm not sure I've actually talked about it on a podcast yet. So go for it.
Awesome sauce. No, because I think this is a cool one for leaders, because so often leaders are looking to try to get everybody to agree. Mm-hmm. Well, when you're trying to get everybody to agree, the tone of the conversation tends to lean towards convincing.
Mm-hmm.
And it's really coming from that place of, once you agree with me, you'll be right too. And until then, you're dumb. Like, it's terrible. The example we used to use was Pelosi and Boehner when they were leading. Everything was about convincing. Everything was seeking agreement. Nothing got done. Mm-hmm. And whether you like Ron Reagan and Tip O'Neill, way back, they didn't like each other. They didn't agree on a lot, but they started with alignment. They aligned around what was important. They were aligned about what they thought was important for the country.
That's right.
They wanted for. So they were able to come to an understanding, right? They could understand the differences in their approaches, their background, and the desired outcomes, and they could have the conversation there. Then they were able to get to agreement on what was to be done. But by starting with alignment, they could get to agreement. When you start with agreement, there is no understanding. There is no alignment. There's no movement. There's no progress. And we have the same shitty situation we have right now.
Yeah, for sure. Because, you know, you're right. Agreement has the energy of there's a right and there's a wrong versus alignment has, you know, we're going in the same general direction. And that feels much better than like this push and pull of, you know, negotiating and trying to force agreement. And, you know, what came up for me as I was hearing you explain the topic, because I just love it, it's a nuance, and people will be like, oh, well, aren't they synonyms? Well, not really, because, you know, and I think it's easy to illustrate in, you know, with a metaphor or an analogy. I can never remember which one's which, but I'm a rock climber and a mountaineer, and, you know, some of these big peaks, like 14ers in Colorado, mountains that are over 14,000 feet tall, are big, hairy, audacious goals for hiking. Okay. And if we, you know, if I'm with a group of people who all want to hike this mountain, and I'm trying to get everyone to agree to start at the same time, end at the same time, take the exact same path with the exact same backpack and the exact same amount of water and the exact same snacks. And because my snacks are right and your snacks are wrong, like, we're never going to hike this mountain and achieve this goal. But if we just say, listen, we're all aligning that our goal is to top out this 14er, right? And we're all responsible adults to bring the approach that works for us to move towards the goal. And that's oversimplifying a little bit. And like, I think it helps people realize sometimes the stupidity or the insignificance of the things that they're trying to agree on anyway, like snacks.
And yet the arguments can become pretty fierce.
Yes.
Right. Because it takes the judging and the voting out of it, not political voting.
But sure.
It takes that right, wrong judgment out of it. And it becomes, what is it that's important? How are each of us going to get there in a way that works? And
right.
That's a very different mindset, particularly when we're back to, how are these folk going to work together? Mm-hmm. In the coming days, weeks, and months, as all of this hullabaloo sifts out, mm-hmm. right? If we go from the mindset of, well, you know, whether it's you didn't vote or you did vote, and then if you did vote, how you voted, and it gets into judging and voting, forget agreement, people are just haranguing each other.
Yep.
That's not going to help working together. But what is it that we're aligned around? But that's the goal of the leader anyway. One of the first responsibilities of the leader is to set and communicate the vision across the entire organization.
That's right.
Fine. That's not the Martin Luther King speech was not the I have a plan speech, right?
That's right.
Right. The leader's job is to get people aligned around what the goal is. There are people serving that organization below the leader that are creating the plans so that her goal is reached, so mm-hmm. that vision is manifested. So that image has to be created. That vision has to be created and communicated. And that's around, that feeds into the alignment, not agreement.
Yeah, I love it. And so is there a chapter in the book that we can take as example number two in terms of contextually, you know, using a mindset shift to get from A to B?
Oh, many, many, many.
Thank you for asking, right?
thank you. No, there's one that I love, and it's chapter 23 is called Rise Up.
Okay.
And one of the, you know, it's based off the quote. So each of the chapters has a quote that was used for the broadcast.
Okay.
And it's all riffed off of. And this one is Suzanne Wien. And it's, your life is an occasion, rise to it.
Oh, neat.
One of the concepts that comes up from that is done beats perfect. That's a huge shift mm-hmm. for organizations. And I'll give you a great example. I, in my last company, we did a lot of overthinking and over perfecting and spent a ludicrous amount of money building a content management platform. It was a web development company, internet strategy. And we faffed about trying to get it just perfect and really mistimed the market. Instead of getting it done to a point we could put it in front of the market and let the market respond and let us shift accordingly, we tried to make it perfect before we released it.
Right.
Hit several major competitors hit before we did. So it was a viable product and it worked and it gave us great runway for several years, but it was a tenth of the impact it could have had because we were so effing focused on perfect, we didn't get it done.
Right. It's a minimum viable product. To write the terminology in the tech space, not a minimally perfect or a maximally perfect product
to put out there to test. You can do that. You can massage it to try to make it perfect for so long that it never gets out there.
Well, exactly. And then the other thing is perfect for whom, right? You can't, like nothing can be perfect for 100% of the people.
And that's the piece, you know, I talked about this book, you know, and I tried to focus on what it was that I wanted for the reader. There are folks, so this also goes to my practice as well. The idea that if all of your goals are around how do I get better at doing what I do, there's a functional limit to your personal and professional success. Because it's all focused on the doing aspect of it. We all reach a point. They should say you can bludgeon your way through corporate only so far, constantly getting better at doing what you do. There's a level of professional success that requires the next leap is you getting better at being who you are at your core.
Yes.
And what excites me about the book is really tailoring it for people who begin to understand that my next leap is coming from getting better at being me. Right. The doing aspect is a natural cascade of getting better at being who you are, being who you be. You do get better at doing what you do because it's more natural expression of who you are authentically. Yeah. So that's who this book is really for.
Yeah.
The folks who understand that by getting better at being who I am, clearing away the clutter of what's not true in me is where my growth is coming from.
Yep. I love that as well as, I don't even know if you noticed your own play on words that you were helping, you were tailoring the experience to.
Yeah. No, I totally missed that.
And if you joined late, folks, we are talking with David Taylor Klaus. So the first part of his hyphened last name, Taylor, and that's what I love about homonyms.
Love it.
I pick up on them all the time, and I love plays on words. So
when my wife and I got married, I grew up as a Klaus, and she grew up as a Taylor. So lumping them together, it's amazing. I'm sure that she's run across that before. I totally missed that until now. So thank you.
Good stuff. Okay, and so I also wanted to chat with you about the philosophy that you have in terms of how you work or how you even select clients to work with, sort of, because I think that it's a powerful, it's also a mindset. It's also something that I think leadershifters can think about in their own worlds. You don't have to be a coach for the cascade effect to be relevant. Yeah. So if you could explain to us, what is the cascade effect? How do you apply it? And then let's banter about how others might apply it.
Sweet. So I have no illusions about the impact footprint that I can have. And I realize that there are only so many hours in the day and only so many months or years that I'll be doing this and so much time that I have here on this planet. Mm-hmm. And it doesn't matter how driven I am by what I want to get done. I have to look for ways to make that impact footprint bigger if I want to get done what I'm here to do. And one of them is, I love the one-to-one coaching and I love coaching the teams that those leaders lead. And there's only so much I can do. So I'm super selective about working with people who, where the impact that I have on them, or that they, the impact they create through the coaching, they're going to bring to the folks that they lead. An organization they lead, a country they lead, it doesn't matter. That I'm always choosing to work with folk who have a cascade impact so that my impact can cascade. And when I design, whether it's this book, whether it's a presentation, whether it's a workshop, it's always designed not just to be compelling for the people that are in the room, in the space, or holding the book, but so that they can take what they learn and bring it out to their world and pass that along.
Right.
And that cascade is a huge value of mine.
I love that. And, you know, and the other thing it says to me is abundance. Like there's no, like the things that you and your clients talk about in a coaching conversation, like there's no like, oh no, you can't use that on your people. That's mine. That's, you know, that's our conversation. It's like, no, please take this question that you found so powerful and caused you so much reflection and to reach an aha moment, and please copy it and use it with your people, or, you know, whatever it is that they're paying forward in.
Absolutely. And I work with leaders. It's opening up the questions about, it's not the, I get that the word legacy is thrown about all the time, but I don't think people really consider what their legacy is. You know, we live in a country where the First Nations had a concept of seventh generation consideration, where you are considering the impact of every action and every decision on the seventh generation ahead of you. And or the seventh generation into the future. The average tenure of a CEO in the US right now is between 3 and 5 years. So we have developed this myopic quarter over quarter performance basis view, and it's terrible.
Yes.
And this is not about the environment. This is about leadership writ large, that we're not considering the cascade, our impact cascade. We barely consider our impact wake. And that's an important thing. That's a huge shift that's available for leaders, is to begin to be clear about and work to get clear about what the shift is you're here to create. And I mean, as a human on this planet in this time, what's the shift you're here to create? Every company, every entrepreneur, every individual has a shift they're here to create. And the reason that it's critical for leaders to understand the shift they're here to create, there's several, here's the most important one. That, especially with what's coming up over the next several days, weeks, months, when you know what the shift is you're here to create, then it's easier to be responsive to upheaval that happens. Like if we play it out in the language of, say, Simon Sinek, start with why.
Yes.
When your why is big enough and clear enough, you can overcome any how that comes up. And we're about to have some serious shift required energetically, emotionally, in terms of business, in terms of the economy, in terms of how we interact and interrelate with people on our team. When you're clear on what the shift is you're here to create, you can better lead those that you lead. You can better serve those that you lead. And you can better architect the shift that needs to be done on a day-to-day basis.
Right. And even the day-to-day decisions are made in alignment, to go back to one of our previous conversations, with the longer term. It may not be seven generations, but it's certainly going to be more than just the next Wall Street earnings report.
Marker, yep.
Yeah, which, believe me, it's one of the many reasons I left Wall Street, because that's the industry I called home for the first half of my career. And
I should have said trigger warning before I went there. So,
because it's not a good way to run the business, with quarterly hoops to jump through in terms of, and some of the CEOs who haven't bought into that mindset, like the former CEO of Costco comes to mind. I remember he used to piss off Wall Street analysts to no end, because he would give, like if he negotiated savings with a supplier of one of their products, he would pass that savings along to the customer, not to the shareholder. Mm-hmm. And investors were pissed off. And he's like, no, in the long run, I want to create raving, loyal fans, shoppers who are going to shop here for the rest of their lives.
And he did.
And he did. And, you know, they've been successful. And so
they don't spend money on advertising. They put all that money into caring for their employees. And it makes a huge difference, right?
Yep.
There's a mindset there. And he's so clear that when you take care of your team takes care of the customers. And he's held that mindset from, he held that from the beginning till his last day. And that's, he was aware of the cascade effect. Whether it was consciously or not, that's a brilliant example of it. And I think when we get too focused on the short-term harpies on the sidelines screaming about what they want, we lose track of the bigger goal. And,
yep.
And that's the wrong kind of shift.
Yeah. I don't know if this quote has been in any of your Mindset Monday recordings or is in the book, but the one that I may not get it exactly right, but it's, you know, if you try to please everyone, you'll please no one. And, you know, and so figuring out who are you trying to please and over what time period are you trying to please them? And
what's
the key measure for
like?
Success? Because you're not going to nail all of them.
Well, and that's actually chapter 24. It talks about having a point of view, and it's having a point of view is critical. Because if you don't, and yours morphs with every influence that comes up, we mm-hmm. see companies that are, you try to chart their direction and they move on a different direction with every CEO. They move on a different direction with every filing, every earnings report. And it's exhausting.
Yep.
Right. And I'm not saying it's easy when you hold a vision and nothing will change, but not knowing your point of view leaves you at the whim of the economic winds.
Yes. So having a conviction about what you as a leader are here to accomplish and what the organization, you know, what the mission and vision of the organization are over the long term, you know, not just for each product or every service or in this quarterly period. The last thing I want to ask you about, David, is to get a little more specific about your rewire framework as part of the book. So you've got the mindset shifts. And then as I understand it, kind of at the end of every chapter, it's like, okay, well, you know, our mindsets have been wired for decades, many of us.
Oh, yeah.
And so how do you unwire that or rewire that? And you've got some steps to help people like really retrain.
Well, rewire is actually an acronym. Because yes. I'm a word nerd.
Ditto.
And it's an acronym for reflect, experiment, okay. write, investigate, revise, and expand.
Okay.
And the concept is, if we want to embed the learning, there's certain tools that we use to do that. Excuse me. And the first one is to bloody sit still.
Yeah.
And each chapter, the first step, the first prompt is reflect. And it's different. We have different prompts that will help you go through giving yourself the time and the space to breathe and reflect on the experiment, on the experience of reading that chapter
mm-hmm.
and being with that mindset, right? And then to experiment with it, to play with a new idea or a new concept, mm-hmm. right? And notice what's resonating, what's dissonant. Where are you indifferent? Where are you leaning in? Where are you freaking out?
Mm-hmm.
And then try to apply that in your world. Well, the next step is, Brené Brown says it's different when you're writing by hand. I think the way she said is, it's the experience goes from head to heart to hand to paper. And writing is different than typing. And look, I was raised by a physician. My handwriting's atrocious. I sometimes have trouble reading my own handwriting. And there's something different when I capture it by hand as I process it and let it out. And so the writing piece is ditch the computer. I put a journaling page at the end of each chapter.
Nice.
So that people will actually be more likely to use it. I can't give you a pen, get your own, right? But there's a space for you to actually use it in the book mm-hmm. to capture everything. And we use prompt, the write prompt is in there with some specific ways for them to play with each chapter. Right? And
Good.
Then investigate, really go deep. Look at what's come up in what you've written and really go deeper and explore what worked and what didn't. A sober assessment without the judgment. And look at what you want to do more of and less of and differently mm-hmm. in the future. And then revise your experiment and take it back out into the world. And again, play with it and see where the differences are. See what works, see what didn't. And then expanding it is where it gets really real, because it's now expanding past this area that you're playing with it, right? And experiment mm-hmm. with it in other areas of your life. Take that learning that you applied here and take it into other arenas of your life. And when I was in school, for instance, in math, you used to do 3 chapters before you had a test. Mm-hmm. But then the test was on chapter 1. Then you do another chapter, and then the test then was on 2, because you were then using what you learned as you did the next chapters, so that you were applying it before you were tested on it. Mm-hmm. It wasn't about rote memory.
Right.
It wasn't about memorizing crap. It was about using it and applying it. So the questions were tied to your learning of it through application. This is the same way. It's letting you do something with it so that it sticks, or is more likely to stick.
Well, for sure. And of course, people have to have the right mindset and, you know, to go through those things, right? Because if they're just going through the rewire checklist as like a to-do list item rather than, you know, truly as a learner, reflector, et cetera, then, you know, garbage in, garbage out, right?
Yep. I've been the box checker before. Like, I'm doing it because it's performative. And this is one where you actually sit still and play with it.
And I
you
love
may be
it.
Frustrated, and it's awesome.
It, you know, and it strikes me as a great way to embed any kind of learning, not just learning about mindset shifts. Like, it could be learning new skills. Also, like what you said, like you can do all of these steps for anything that's truly new and different and not completely final. It, you know, right. A process or, you know, a new product, et cetera, because that's daily anymore, right? I mean, now I feel like the term VUCA is overused, but,
yeah.
You know.
Well, we underestimated what VUCA looked like.
For sure. And like, you know, it's almost like VUCA isn't VUCA anymore. It's the normal.
Yeah. We're in a new abnormal. Yeah.
Yeah. And so, you know, there's never going to be a how-to book or a 101 book about leadership in this day and age. And so it is more about getting comfortable, being uncomfortable and experimenting in little steps, you know, like, I mean, and this is almost taking us back to a recap, because some of the notes I took earlier on was, you know, around things being short and easily digestible and yeah. taking big projects and breaking them down into smaller steps. And this is yet another contextual way to do that.
Well, so, and back to something else we talked about pre-show, look, everybody in our house is ADHD, right? So we've learned a lot about systems and structures that help keep you accountable to something to which you want to be held accountable.
Sure.
And by the way, that's the key. Right. You have to have a motivation attached to it, because it doesn't matter what system or structure you use. If you're not motivated or can't find a motivation to attach to it, yeah, good luck. Mm-hmm. So, and yep. that's a lot of the work of parenting kids with ADHD, is helping them learn to find the motivation. Well, guess what? If you're choosing to spend time doing these exercises and doing these prompts and going through this book, clearly there's some motivation to create shift. So mm-hmm. let's assume that's there. I created the Mindset Mondays Accelerator, so that it's an online system that helps keep you prompted and fueled as you go through this. It gives you links to the original videos, and it gives you some additional content and a playground in a private Facebook group to communicate with other folks that are going through it along with you. So the Mindset Mondays Accelerator is designed, it's sort of an online experience that helps you keep going with the book.
I love it.
Because the world gets busy. I need reminders.
Yeah, well, we get busy, and it's just too comfortable to slip back into old habits. So we do need the accelerators and the reminders and the accountability partners and all the things.
is because Cube Ninja is very powerful. We used to joke about it, like we would send our team out for this brilliant 3-day offsite and everybody was excited and everything was going to be totally different and everybody was pumped. And then Monday morning, everybody goes back into the office, the email starts, the phone starts, and you forget everything. Yep. And you go back to the day-to-day because that's what was familiar.
So absolutely.
Give so yourself folks, the structures so that you can create the conditions for success.
Yeah. I love it.
All right, wrap away.
I was just going to say, so for those of you who are feeling really compelled by the book and mindset shifts and how you can make anything new stick with the Rewire framework and so forth, how can they reach you, David?
So the easiest way is Mindset Mondays with DTK, right? That URL, it'll give you information about the book. You can download the Rewire framework. There are links in the top to find out more about me and what I do. And once you've got the book, there are also links in there to the Mindset Mondays Accelerator. So try to keep it super simple.
I love it. Well, leader shifters, you know what a fan I am of shifting mindsets. So Mindset Mondays sounds like a great tool for you to explore and check out and experiment with as part of your personal journeys to shifting whatever it is in your life that you're looking to shift, whether it's your team, whether it's in your family, or even in your own life purpose. Of course, work with many of you who are looking to reinvent themselves and even completely shift, make over what you're doing in the world. You know, this time has caused a lot of contemplation about, you know, what the hell am I doing right, when we actually have that opportunity to pause. So I really thank you for joining us on the show today, David. I think the conversation we had is going to be useful to a lot of listeners and watchers. So thank you so much.
So enjoyed it. Thanks for letting me play with you.
My pleasure. Leadershifters, thanks again for joining us. Until next time.